Good morning and welcome everyone to Berkeley Zen Center. It is a joy and a privilege to welcome our old friend Shohaku Okamura Roshi back to Berkeley Zen Center. He's been coming here to teach us for well over a decade. Shohaku-san, Okamura Roshi was ordained by his teacher, Uchiyama Roshi, over 40 years ago, and somehow his teacher asked of him to come to America and to teach Dogen and Soto Zen teachings in English. And somehow we've been fortunate enough that he had the generosity and courage to do that. He's the founding teacher of Sanshin Zen Community over almost 20 years ago. The temple is located in Bloomington, Indiana. No one in this room could have been a Soto Zen student for any length of time without having been touched by Okamura Roshi's teachings. He has translated, he's a preeminent translator of Dogen Zenji, the founder of this school. He has translated commentaries by his own teachers, Uchiyama Roshi, and his teacher before him, Sawaki Koto Roshi. We study his books, Realizing Genjo Koan, here regularly, and Living by Vow. He also has translated many, many fascicles of the Shobo Genzo and generously teaches them in week-long teachings. And we welcome him with the publication of his latest series of waka poems by Dogen Zenji, which he will be teaching us today. Thank you and welcome, Shokuhaku-san.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm really happy to be here again. This time, I'd like to introduce this book, Zen of Four Seasons, Dogen Zenji no Waka. We made this book at Sanshinji in Bloomington. Dogen Zenji wrote quite many waka poems. He was a great Zen master and also a philosopher, but he was also a great, great poet. And he wrote poems in Chinese and also in Japanese. Japanese poems, traditional Japanese poems are short. I think you know better about haiku. Haiku only has 17 syllables. But haiku is much younger than waka. Waka is as old as Japanese civilization. The first question... Okay.
Sorry, it was ringing just a little bit.
It's okay now.
Okay now?
I think so.
Okay. The first collection of Japanese waka poems was made, I think, 7th or 8th century, so 1,000 years ago. That is called Manyo Shu. Since then, waka has been a very important part of Japanese poetry. And Dogen Zenji was from a very well-educated family, and both his grandfather and father was well-known waka poet. At that time, all government officials need to be a good writer and also a good poet. So, Dogen Zenji's biography says he studied Chinese poems when he was four from his grandfather. So, writing waka or Chinese poems is something very not special, something very natural thing for him. So around 60 of waka poems are part of his Dogen Zenji biography. although we don't know who collected those poems, Waka poems. But since a few years ago, I have been translating and making comments on each Waka a month for Sanshin Zen community in newsletter. And in the first years, I translated his Dogen's Wakas about the seasons, four seasons. You know, both in Waka poem and haiku, season is very important. You know, Japanese people are very sensitive about the seasons, the beauty of seasons, and changing of the seasons. That's why I first selected Dogen's poems about seasons, and we decided to make a book for fundraising. And in Bloomington, Indiana, there is a kind of an expert of traditional binding of book. And he knows how to do, you know, Japanese binding. And he bought handmade paper from Nepal, because Japanese handmade paper is really expensive. And he put bamboo on here and burned my hands. So this is really a unique book. And kindly, Kazu Tanahashi, he is a great calligrapher, made two calligraphies of Dogen's Waka. And a Japanese photographer contributed the photo of each season, spring, summer, fall, and winter. And I translated 14 Waka poems in this book. Introduction and conclusion, and three poems on each season. So that makes 14. Anyway, today I'd like to, this morning, I'd like to talk on the poem as an introduction. And in the afternoon, I talk about the one poem for each season. That's my plan for today. And the first poem as an introduction is one of the most well-known Waka poem of Dogen. You know, Waka has 31 syllables. It's longer than haiku, but it's still very short. So let me read first in Japanese and my English translation, and I talk about this poem. The title of this Waka poem in Japanese is Hondai no Menmoku. And in Japanese it goes as follows. Haru wa hana, natsu hototogisu, aki wa tsuki. Fuyu yuki kiede, sudoshi kari keri. My translation. A poem expressing the original phase. Spring, flowers. Summer, cuckoos. Autumn, the moon. Winter, snow does not melt. All seasons, pure and upright. So, in this very short poem, he lists up the beauty of each season. Spring, summer, fall, or autumn, and winter. And those examples of beauty of each season are not unique. You know, these four things appeared in many numberless waka poems in Japan. So his list of beauty is not unique at all. All Japanese people know this thing, beauty of these examples. But important point to understand Dogen, why he entitled this poem Beauty of Each Season as Hondai no Menmoku, or in English, the original phrase. You know, all Japanese people know and appreciate the beauty of each season, and they, all Japanese knows, you know, the beauty of the flower, sound, song of cuckoos, and moon in the autumn, and snow in the winter. But he called those beauties as Hondai no Menmoku, or the original face. This is how Dogen combined Japanese sense of beauty, traditional sense of beauty, with Zen teaching. And this expression, the original face, I think many of you already know, that appears from a kind of a story, or a koan story, about the sixth ancestor, Hyūnan. When Hyūnan received the transmission from the fifth ancestor, Hyūnan was not a monk yet, he was a lay person. And yet somehow he received the transmission and became the sixth ancestor. But some monks at the fifth ancestor's monastery didn't like it. So fifth ancestor asked Hyūnan to escape from the monastery. I don't think this is historically true. I hope. But monks chased after him to get the bowl and robe as evidence of transmission back. But Hyūnan escaped so fast, so many of them stopped chasing, but only one monk catch up with him on the mountains. And that person was a very strong, tough person who used to be a soldier. So Hyūnan thought it not possible to escape from him, or he didn't want to fight against him. So he put the robe, that means okesa, and the oryoki bowl on the stone and said, if you want to these things, please take. Then the person said, I didn't come to pick up these robe and bowls, but I came for the Dharma. So he asked Hyūnan to teach the Dharma. Then what Hyūnan said it was, without thinking good and bad, without thinking good and bad, what is the original face or true face of you? He called his name. This expression, original face, came from this story. So this means true face means true reality of our life. And that is beyond dualistic thinking. You know, good and bad represent our dualistic or discriminating thinking. You know, our discriminating thinking makes our life into samsara. You know, when we encounter something, we evaluate this, and if we think this is good, or this is important, or meaningful, or precious, I want to keep this with me and make this my possession. But it's often it's not easy to make this to my possession, so I chased after this. when something gave me the not pleasant sensation, I don't like this. I try to stay away from this, but somehow, you know, all these things I don't like came toward me without my agreement. So I become angry, or I hate this thing, and I try to escape from this thing. So that kind of discriminating thinking made me to run after something we want, or escaping something we don't want. So our life becomes running, and we lose the sight of peaceful, stable ground of our life. That is called samsara. Sometimes we feel, you know, we are successful, and we feel like we are heavenly beings. But more often, we are like a hungry ghost, or even hell dwellers. And because things are always, situations are always changing, we transmigrate within not only six realms, but much more different realms. That is samsara. So this dualistic thinking and judgment and chasing after one thing and escaping from another thing makes us samsara. So what Hyunan said was we should discover what is the true faith before thinking good and bad. That is the meaning of this story, and this, you know, this original faith or true reality of all beings came from, of course, Mahayana Buddhist teaching, and not only Mahayana Buddhist teaching, but even when Shakyamuni attained awakening under the Bodhi tree, he had hesitation to teach, because the true reality or dharma, or truth, is very deep, profound, and subtle. He thought, even I try to teach, no one could understand. You know, this reality or truth is difficult to express using words and letters, because words are dualistic as a nature, by nature. So Buddha had hesitation to teach, but somehow, because Brahma asked him three times, he couldn't say no. So he stood up and walked to the deer park and tried to share what he experienced, the awakening, with first those five monks. I think in this process, he translated what he experienced and how he expressed or explained using words and letters. So from the very beginning of Buddhism, you know, the true reality is beyond thinking or language or conceptual concept. And yet, as Buddha did, we have to express and explain what this is using words and letters. So Buddhism has, from the very beginning, has contradiction. You know, truth or reality cannot be said or expressed or grasped using words and letters. And yet, we have to use our ability to think using words and letters to share the same truth or reality or experience of that reality. So that is what, you know, this true faith means, true faith or true reality or original faith of each one of us means. So we need to discover what is this true reality of this being five skandhas without using language. And in the Mahayana sutras, you know, this reality can be expressed and experienced only within silence is depicted. For example, in the Vimala Kirti Sutra, the one chapter of the Vimala Kirti Sutra is entering the Dharma gate of non-duality or oneness. And in this chapter, Vimala Kirti asked all the bodhisattvas around him, tell me about how we can enter the gate of non-duality. And there are many bodhisattvas, and they all said this and that. For example, arising and perishing are duality. So we need to go beyond this duality and find neither arising nor perishing. And all the bodhisattvas said basically the same thing. These are duality. So we should go beyond such duality. But Manjushri was the last bodhisattva who was asked to say something. Manjushri said, all of you, all the bodhisattvas said was right, but by making say so, you create another duality. That is, duality and non-duality become duality. If we think duality is not good and non-duality is good, then this becomes duality. And we think, I don't like this, so I want to enter non-duality. You know, this is the same as I don't like this, so I want to escape. Or because I like this, I want to make this my position. And non-duality becomes such a desirable thing that creates another duality. So Manjushri said, in order to enter the reality, non-duality, we should stop saying anything. Close our mouth and stop thinking. We cannot use any language. That is the fact Manjushri said. That means what he said, you know, we should not we stop using language, it's still a language. Anyway, after that Manjushri asked Vimala Kirti, how do you express or explain this non-duality? Vimala Kirti kept silent. He didn't say anything. Then Manjushri said, you know, your silence, Vimala Kirti's silence is more eloquent expression of non-duality. That is a kind of a source of many such Zen stories, including this saying by Huinan. What is original case without thinking good and bad? And there are many that kind of Zen stories. You know, one of the famous one is when Shakyamuni transmitted Dharma to Mahakashyapa. One day Shakyamuni ascended his seat, so as people expect he is going to say something, he is going to give some teaching. But at that time he didn't say anything, but he picked up a stalk of flower. That's it. So Noah understood what this means, but only Mahakashyapa smiled. Then Shakyamuni said, you know, I have, you know, this Dharma named, it's a long name, 消防現像涅槃妙心寺総務総務表の異能の訪問I can translate what I need to I can Shakyamuni said I have this dharma now I transmit this dharma to Mahakashapa so this transmission was done without any speaking you know, that is one example and Hyunan's sayings to this monk was another example that is what original faith means in Zen teaching then what is the relation between the beauty of seasons and this true reality of all beings which cannot be expressed using language. You know, poems are language. So how, why Dogen could say, you know, the description of beauty of season can be the expression of this true reality beyond language. I think that is a point of understanding this poem, this particular poem, and not only this poem, but all of his poems. Why he wrote poems? What the meaning of writing poems for him as a Zen master? How could he combine this true reality or teaching Zen teaching of non-duality and writing poems? It seems contradicted. And Dogen himself said it's contradicted. In Shobo Genzo Zoi Monki, he said, Zen practitioner should not write poems. But he wrote poems. So he's a very interesting person. Anyway, to make a connection between this reality or truth beyond language expression of beauty of seasons using language. I'd like to introduce another koan, same kind of koan story. This is a koan case one of Shoyoroku, or Book of Serenity. The story is pretty the same. Again, Shakyamuni ascended his seat, and he didn't say anything, so probably he didn't like to speak. But again, Manjushri came up. Let me read that koan. One day, the world-honored one ascended the seat. Manjushri struck the gavel and said, clearly observe the Dharma of the King of Dharma. The Dharma of the King of the King of Dharma is thus. The world-honored one then got down from the seat. So again, he didn't say anything. But Manjushri said, while Buddha kept silence, Manjushri says, the Dharma, the teaching, or the reality itself expressed by through teaching of this King of Dharma, means Shakyamuni, is thus. Thus means silence. Didn't say anything. So this is very kind of a common koan story. Again, true reality cannot be expressed using language. But Wanshi or Honji, who was a Chinese Soto Zen master, composed a verse of each of 100 koans that became the Book of Serenity. And in his verse, Wanshi, Zen Master Wanshi or Honji's verse in Book of Serenity on this koan is as follows. the unique breeze of reality. The unique breeze of reality. Do you see? Question. Continuously, creation runs her loom and shuttle, loom and shuttle, weaving the ancient brocade, incorporating the forms of spring. But nothing can be done about Manjushri's baking. Let me read it again. The unique breeze of reality, do you see? Continuously, creation runs her loom and shuttle, weaving the ancient brocade, incorporating the forms of spring. But nothing can be done about Manjushri's leaking. So one she is saying, you know, this true reality or true form or original face is beyond beyond thinking, beyond duality. So we have to see it and experience it. But it's not possible to speak using language. But he says, continuously creation runs her loom and shuttle. This creation refers to in Chinese, Kemo means mother of creation. So the image is this mother of creation is working with the loom, the weaving machine. And you know, there is a vertical and horizontal thread. You know, she's working this vertical and horizontal thread, up and up. And in Japanese, and originally Chinese imaginary, you know, this vertical thread is like a time from past to present and future. And the horizontal thread is like a space. So within time and space, you know, all different kind of thread connect each other and create certain patterns on the fabric. So this is the image of the four seasons for Chinese people. You know, the mother of creation is operating the weaving machine, and depending upon the thread for vertical and horizontal, that means within time and space, all things are getting together or disperse and create the scenery of each season. So this is the image of Chinese image of interdependent origination or interconnectedness within time and space. You know, Indian image of this interconnectedness is Indra's net. You know, in the palace of Indra, there are beautiful net. There are also a thread, and the knot of the thread in the net, there is a beautiful jewel, and this jewel reflects everything within this network, and all other jewel on other knot also reflect everything. So everything reflects everything each other. That is a Indian image of interconnectedness, or a network of interdependent origination. And this image of weaving machine or loom is a Chinese image of interconnectedness, how things are happening depending upon the elements, how things getting together or separate or connect each other. then spring has its own beauty, and but it doesn't stay, you know, without moving, without changing. So it changes. And in the summer, there we see different pattern, different scenery, and, you know, fall and winter. So four seasons refer to changes or impermanence. And this change is caused by, you know, movement and interrelation with all beings. But you know, each year, you know, those four seasons repeat. You know, so each year the same tree blooms the same flowers. So the image of season, four seasons, include both changing and also continuity. Things are always changing, but each year same thing happens. Four seasons are, you know, doesn't change. You know, at least in the past. We don't know about the future. Depending upon how we live, we may destroy that, you know, continuation. But anyway, this is Chinese image of interdependent origination. And this interdependence, or in the interdependent origination or co-arising, is the truth or reality Buddha awakened to. So from one side, you know, this each and everything is empty. There's no independent entity. Separate from other beings, all are interconnected. So we cannot say, you know, this thing exists. And yet, we cannot say this thing is not does not exist. This is here, and yet this is not really here. That is what emptiness means. And that is why, you know, the reason was, you know, everything can exist only within relation with others. So there's no fixed self nature. That means when something changes, this must be changed. That is two sides of interconnectedness, and we cannot say form is really existing, but we have to say form is emptiness. But emptiness is also form, so we should not neglect each side. So, you know, these two phrases, form is emptiness and emptiness is form, should not be separate, but these are one thing. That is why it's difficult to understand using our conceptual thinking. Anyway, so for Chinese Zen masters, you know, the change of seasons is a very clear image or example of this reality of interconnectedness. So I think Dogen connected these two, beauty of the seasons and its changes. It doesn't stay even one moment. You know, in Japanese lunar calendars, we not only four seasons, but Japanese people divided into 24 seasons. 24, so, you know, every 2 weeks season changes. You know, the very subtle changes, but Japanese people and also Japanese culture are very sensitive about this subtle change. And yet this change has some, you know, relation and connection, or cause and result. So this season, beauty of season, is really a good way to express this form is emptiness, and emptiness is the form. That is the true face, or original face of our life. Neither U nor Mu, Mu is being, and Mu is non-being. And one of the expressions of emptiness is neither being nor non-being. And the beauty is not a being. But somehow, you know, we find the beauty of each season through different phenomena, like a flower blooming, or a bird singing, or green leaves, or the sound of waves, or colors of mountains. You know, if you read Dogen Shobogenzo, all those such as voice of a stream and colors of mountains, Dogen says they are expanding Dharma. And the Dharma they are expanding is this true reality or true original face. That is my understanding why Dogen could connect, you know, the beauty of each season and Zen teaching of original face or true reality of all beings. In Honshi, or Wanshi, in Japanese pronunciation, continues. Weaving the ancient brocade, so this mother of creation is weaving the ancient brocade, ancient different eternity, brocade, incorporating the form of spring. Form of spring is here and now. So using weaving the eternal or ancient brocade, this mother of creation express each and every phenomenal beings in each season. In this case, the form of spring that is impermanent. Impermanent things express the eternity, which doesn't change. This, kind of contradicted idea of impermanence and eternity there within this mother of creation's work of weaving. And weaving in Chinese character is qi. And Dogen used, and this qi also means a machine. And machine, oldest machine in Chinese civilization was weaving machine, or loom. So this qi means originally referred to weaving machine. And this qi is a word Dogen used in his expression, for example, Zen qi. Zen qi is total function in my translation. And he wrote one fascicle of Shobogenzo entitled Zen qi. Total function. In Katagiri Roshi translations, this is such as something like, do you remember?
Total dynamic working.
This total dynamic working is working of this mother of creation. You know, all these things, you know, evolve as a season, and we are part of the seasons. We cannot be observer, but when flowers bloom, somehow our mind changes. Sometimes, you know, after a long winter, when we see the first flower blooms in the early spring, we become happy. So our mind or our life under a small flower is connected. Tiny flower can influence or even change our mind. So we are really connected, and we are part of this scenery, the spring. So because each form of the spring express this eternal life, you know, our life also express this eternal lifespan of Tathagata. This came from the Lotus Sutra or Dharmakaya, or you know, in the Sutra of Buddha's last teaching Buddha gave right before his death. He said, after my death, you should practice following my teachings. And then within your practice, the Buddha's, not Buddha's, but indestructible Dharmakaya of Tathagata is always present there within our practice. Our practice is within time and space, isn't it? But through our, you know, practice, our activity as a practice, Buddha's eternal lifespan can be expressed. That is the similar with each and every things in the spring, express the timeless spring. So this eternity or timelessness and each and every impermanent things are really working together. That is the image of this poem of Wanshi and Dogen. And finally, Wanshi says, but nothing can be done about Manjushri's leaking. In this story, and also the story in the Vimalakirti Sutra, you know, Manjushri gave a kind of a explanation of the meaning of silence. Without Manjushri's explanation, if only the sutra said Vimalakirti didn't say anything, then we don't really understand what the meaning of this silence. So we need some explanation what this meaning, this silence means. Or in the case of Buddha's Dharma transmission, Buddha himself says, I have, you know, this Dharma, and now I transmit to Mahakashyapa. If Buddha says, didn't say so, we don't understand, you know, what the, you know, meaning of Buddha watching the flower and Mahakashyapa smile. If Buddha didn't say within this silence, this Dharma was transmitted, we don't really understand, you know, what is happening. So, you know, this reality beyond language needs to be explained or at least pointed out using the language. And that is the meaning of writing, poems or verses or Dogen's Shobogenzo. Those are the, you know, Manjushri's leaking, and they always say reality cannot be said using words. So, you know, this contradiction, reality cannot be expressed using words, and yet we have to explain, to point this reality by using words. Otherwise, we cannot share, you know, this Dharma. So, that is what I'm doing now. So I'm leaking. Well, I think it's good time to stop my talk this morning. Do you have any question?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. With regard to waka and haiku, is there a significance or relation to the 17 or 31 syllables to any teaching?
You mean Buddhist teaching?
Buddhist or Taoist or some other teaching?
No, this is this syllable is only in Japanese culture. Not the number of the syllables, but somehow we traditionally in Japanese poetry, five syllables and seven syllables are used. Somehow the rhythm that made by those five syllables and seven syllables create some kind of beauty in our mind. So it's simply Japanese culture that has no connection with Buddhist or Taoist or any Chinese philosophy.
Okay. Thank you.
Please.
So it's very poignant to me that you're speaking today as it's raining for the drizzling for the first time in quite a while. So it feels like Dharma rain. What it brings to mind is often when I'm in the forest or a park, especially around here with the old trees, I'll see a tree that's leaning, you know, that looks like it's on its way to falling, and have this sense that in the time span of the life cycle of the tree, we are the blink of an eye. So it's like it's on its way, and we appear, and, you know, we can't necessarily sense that. And what comes up is this real, like, wanting to ask this tree for forgiveness because I don't know if it's going to make it. And yet, in the trees, as I imagine it, we're the blink of an eye and it's already falling. And I'm just wondering how that connects to what you're teaching today.
Well, falling means all the tree fall down?
Well,
is it a process of dying?
Well, eventually, but these are, you know, these could be 100-year-old trees that are going to live for another hundreds of years, but they're just leaning right now.
It's up, I think it's up to the gravity. And the weight of the tree itself. And it also has some connection with the wind. If wind blow from always from blow one direction, you know, the tree need to lean this way or that way. So it's you know, whether tree could be upright or leaning is really also how this tree has connected with all other things. Please.
Well, I'm going to open my mouth and, you know, I have to use words, but aren't words themselves, why are they any different than the ancient brocade? Aren't words part of the ancient brocade?
I think so.
Why? Can we ever be apart from, aren't words part of what it is that we are manifesting?
I think so. For example, you know, in Zen teaching, language is often compared with a finger and reality as a moon, boundless light of moon, and we point this moon with using language. So that Zen teaching is we should not see the finger, but we should see the moon. Not the finger itself. But not Dogen, but Ryokan. Ryokan said, the finger is a part of the moon.
Dogen said there's nothing to nourish us besides painted rice cakes.
Yes.
That's the same thing, right?
Yeah. So,
creativity.
Expression using words, language, or logics can be a painted rice cake, but without painting rice cake, we cannot receive the nourishment to nurture our spirituality. Please?
Is that also what's meant by nothing can be done about Manjushri's leaking? In other words, we can't avoid Manjushri.
We cannot avoid, right. We need Manjushri. We need such a talkative person. And Dogen did the same thing by writing Shogogendo. If we memorize the entire Shogogenzo and repeat, it's what Dogen expect us to do that. We need to invent our own expression. Even our expression cannot be, such wonderful poetry or literature. Still, we need to express using our own words.
I was just thinking the original face that we carry is like the season. It doesn't change itself, but it's the sum of what the weather is and what's going on outside, right?
Yeah. And also aging.
Suzuki Roshi says that we should have faith in our practice, that as we go through this, we're wearing the original face and able to experience.
That is how moon reflect itself through this each and every drop of water. Please.
We were repeating the vows in the Bodhisattva ceremony, as you probably heard this morning, and I was struck, as I always am, by a lot of not, I will not, I will always, I will never. So is there a way to express the precepts with our original face?
The precept we receive is an expression of this, according to Dogen's tradition, is an expression of this true reality beyond wording, using wording. So if we study the Dogen's comment on each of the 10 major precepts, this is realier than teaching. Those comments by Dogen on each of the 10 major precepts is like a capping words in the literature. So we cannot keep those precepts just be dualistic, good and bad. This is good, so I do this, and this is bad, so I should avoid this. If we have such a simple, dualistic thinking or attitude, then we cannot really understand what this precept means. Okay. We have time. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. In the afternoon, I'm going to talk about each waka poem for each season.